Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this edition of The Photo Show. We're looking forward to talking for a while tonight about some gear and some news that we've heard. And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk about planning. Before Christmas, we talked about what work you might do on your photographs after taken. This time, we're going to have a little chat about what to do to get to that point, what planning is required. So we'd be talking about that with our three experts tonight. So we have Damien. How are you, Damien?
Very good, thank you very much. And it's nice to have a few moons around the place. I only saw one, but there's four moons here, but it's really good.
Yeah, I finally managed to get something passable. Ian, how are you? Good evening.
Very good, thank you. Yeah, good evening. Still going with my 365 project.
Yep. Good.
23 days in, and I haven't missed a day yet. So
yeah. I found a really good competition I'm going in for. It's called 1 Year. It's brilliant. You know, one photograph for the whole year, and I should be laughing. You know. And good evening, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. I'm definitely not doing 365, but I am going to do all the moons this year. Maybe not all full, but I will get one of each moon. So looking forward to the snow moon, the next one.
I thought we only had one moon.
Well, you know, all the different names.
Yeah. You could be doing 360 as well, where you're just turning round, just taking photographs. That might be the other way.
How do you know it's just one moon, though? It could be a different one.
Right, okay. Let's move on to talking about news items that we've spotted. So in the news this week, we've seen an article here about Photoshop and Adobe, about the subscription fees, which for some people, it's quite a lot of money if you're only using that one part of the Adobe Creative Suite. I think if you're using all of them, I think you use all of them, don't you, Ian, that you get a better value for the them.
No, I've only got the photography package. Okay. So it gives me Lightroom Classic, Photoshop. And Bridge, and it gives you quite a lot, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I do pay for additional storage. So I do pay like nearly £20 a month. But I think it's great value personally, because I'm using it nearly on a daily basis. But...
Okay. Damien, you saw this article here about other options, didn't you?
Yes. I mean, I've got the whole suite, but I don't pay for extra storage, because I just get very. I take. The library, the Lightroom library, and put it on a hard disk or that, and store the RAWs. So and it's really nice, because some of the stuff that the Photoshop does and the Lightroom does is really excellent. But you have got Capture One. I've not used Capture One. Skyloom I've used. I've got a copy of that on the machine, because I want a copy, and it's really nice. It does some really nice stuff for you. It's got an artificial intelligence to it. And it's quite good for, I think the price is around about 70-80 quid, and it's just standalone. So you don't pay a subscription to it, and you get a little bit of an update of it. So therefore, probably in a year's time, 2 years time, it will become out of date and I'll have to redo it. The one that I have used quite a lot, mainly because a colleague of mine is really into open source, is the GIMP. And GIMP is really got a very steep learning curve, but it's just basic and you have to add things into it. But it has layers, it has all the various bits to it, but you just have to get used to using it. But that is totally free, but it's a do-it-yourself editing software. You pick little bits up from and have to get into the chat rooms and work out what people are doing. And that's why, if you don't want to do that, you will then spend the money and get onto the Photoshop and the Lightroom and the like.
Because some of the apps actually are pretty good at doing much. I've even used Photos on the Apple to do.
Adobe's Lightroom and Photoshop on mobile for free. You don't get a couple of features, and you get a limited amount of storage. So if you just wanted something, it is actually available free of charge.
I quite like Snapseed. It's really good. It's very quick and easy to use for mobile stuff. I don't think it stands the test if you want to get into using it for desktop and printing out, and that's the difference. The mobile ones, again, they are free, Neil, but then I have to try and link them in with the paid subscription one. and unlock things. So it's not as easy. Snapseed is intuitively quite easy to use. Have you used Snapseed?
I've used Snapseed, yeah. I was just going to say, I've got a few thoughts on this. I mean, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with subscriptions, because it seems like everything's going to subscription. And it's like, yeah, where do you stop? You know, because all of a sudden, you know, your subscriptions can amount to like hundreds of pounds a month.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's really tricky. Having said that, you know, my Adobe subscription, I think is worth every penny. You know, as soon as a new feature is released, you know, the update's sitting there when I log into the computer and I can upgrade straight away. You know, it's just so convenient. The other thing I find is, you know, if you look at magazines, camera clubs, YouTube, even, you know, college courses and that, the standard is still Adobe and Photoshop. So, you know, even if you're trying to follow through a tutorial in a magazine, 9 times out of 10, they're referring to, this is what you do in Photoshop. So if you do go down the route of another editing package, there's less resource there, if that makes sense, to learn it, because the industry is still predominantly geared towards Adobe.
Have you ever used their support tool, Ian?
No.
I have, and I have to say, they were very responsive and very helpful, and did resolve the problem I had with the library. I had a load of files that were just kind of stuck, and they were very helpful and took me through it step by step with instructions and made sure it was resolved. So, you know, there can be benefits in pain.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I love it. I use it almost, you know, on a daily basis. And
yeah, some of the apps are purely for use, say, for on your laptop or your desktop, and then there's others which are available for iPads and stuff like that. Do you use a mixture of both, Ian?
Well, that's the other thing that I love about using Lightroom. That's the reason I pay for the additional storage, because, you know, my initial process is download the images onto my desktop, get them into Lightroom, but then I've got them on my iPad, I've got them on my phone, and the number of times I'll say to someone, took a nice picture yesterday, and you get my phone out, load Lightroom up, and there it is. You know, it's so convenient to be able to go between the devices. And also, I might edit an image on desktop, but then to be able to look at it on another device, which is probably going to be consumed more on the phone or the iPad, it might look slightly different. And I think, actually, I need to tweak that, and I can tweak it. So, yeah, I think it's brilliant.
Good.
I quite like Bridge. I use Bridge quite a lot, but then it irritates me on the Mac because there's no AirDrop. I have to then take the thing over to go. I have to go then go into Finder and then use the Mac AirDrop. So there's little things Adobe don't make. I mean, it's Apple, Adobe, two different companies, and there's little things that just don't quite work between the two.
If you have Creative Cloud, it goes between the two.
What, on the Creative Cloud?
Yeah, if you have Creative Cloud, you can load it in Lightroom and pick it up in Photoshop.
Yes, I don't do that. I tend to use the Apple stuff and throw it over to there. But yeah, I suppose you can do that. Okay. And it's quite nice what you did with your Lightroom library when you shared that. That was quite easy.
The other piece of news, big news of the year, is I've actually got a photo of the moon. Look. First time I've got something that's almost halfway decent, and then these three come out with their ones and make me look, you know, foolish again. But the interesting thing I was asking was, I couldn't understand why the moon looks so different in the four photographs. Ian and Neil's look similar, but mine could be another planet, and Damien's got a slightly different view. Neil, you were explaining about the difference between rising and setting. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, so mine and Ian's are both set in, so they're taken early in the morning, whereas Damo's was taken just after moonrise. Was yours this month?
Yes, very late at night, and I think it's picked up a lot of the muck in the sky.
So a little bit of dehaze will help you there.
Yeah.
So yours is similar, but it's slightly different part of the rotation. So it's because, of course, the Earth's moving and the moon does an arc over the Earth, or the Earth effectively is moving around the moon, but we see it as an arc from the ground. So I think you're seeing different times. It's the same face. If you look at the details, they're all exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's just the different part of when the Earth's moved around.
Because it looks like Damien's has actually turned anti-clockwise, doesn't it? If you look at your piece in the bottom right-hand corner.
Yeah, so if you take Damien's as the, I don't know if it says his is the first one, and then the clock starts ticking and it carries on going clockwise, you'll get yours.
Yeah.
And then by the time it sets, you're picking up Ian and mine.
Yeah.
Which you're probably taking at a very similar time.
It's interesting, if Australian listeners are in, that the volcano has created a lot of diffraction of the light, and so the moon is a very strange colour over that part of the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Interesting. So could any of our Australian listeners please send us in a couple of moonshots so we can compare and see what the Northern Hemisphere looks to the Southern Hemisphere?
Of the moon in the sky, anyway.
Yep. Good, guys. Okay, let's move
on. At least it's not it's a blue moon. You've got a blue moon there. And that's a song that my club like, the blue moon.
I'm singing it all the time. Right, let's see what we've got in gear for this week. So tonight's gear section, we've got a couple of items to look at. And then we're going to ask Neil, who's now got his own Z9, to actually give us a review. And we're going to look at some of the photographs he's been sending in, and he can tell us what he thinks of his new camera. But before we get
wiping the dribble off.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, though, Damien, you saw Leica have released a new camera. What's this one called?
It's the M11, they've called it, and it's £7,500. It's a 16 megapixel full frame. It's got an ISO up to 50,000, and it's got quite a nifty looking viewfinder that you look down if you look at the pictures of it. It just looks really nice. I once had a Leica when I was working, but it was made in a Portuguese manufacturer. So it wasn't a true Leica, but they were just lovely to hold at the time and that. But this does look, the thing is they don't fiddle very much with it. They don't mess around with it very much. They keep everything very similar and the same, but it's just the quality. And some of the pictures that they're showing look really nice. I mean, it could give the Z9 a bit of a run for the money, but you never know.
In your dreams.
But you missed something out there, Damo, that viewfinder that you referred to, it doesn't come with a camera.
Oh, you have to pay extra for that, do you?
It's 600 quid.
Oh, right, okay. So it's £8,000 then.
Oh, yeah, the Leica Viso Flex 2 costs 600 quid, so it's basically an electronic EVF that you attach into the hot shoe, because it's a rangefinder style camera, so it has got an eyepiece, but this is an additional viewfinder.
I've never heard anyone say a bad thing about Leicas when they've got them, but they seem to be
well, you're not going to spend $8,000 on a camera and go, yeah, it's crap,
rubbish. Yeah, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
You could buy a Z9 and a lens. Probably still have some change.
Get a red dot on it. You get the red dot though on the Z9.
Yeah. I got a red penny you can borrow.
Okay. Ian, you have seen this. Is it a new Canon camera, or is it just an update to an existing
one? It's a new camera, so it's the Canon R5C, so it's a cinema camera. And you know, we joked back in shows gone past about, you know, the R5 being limited with its 8K shooting, and they should, you know, you could stick a fan on it, you know, so you can get some longer shooting. Well, that's exactly what they've gone and done. So
what do you mean they've been listening to our show and telling them what to do?
So this
we should actually get a commission for this. Yeah.
It's actually slightly deeper than the R5, apparently, because it's got a fan in it. And unlike the R5, it doesn't have IBIS in it. I don't know if that's a big thing, if that makes a difference for video shooters or not. Whether that's because that to squeeze a famine in, I don't know. But interestingly, if you switch it into stills mode, it is identical to an R5 in terms of menus and the shooting capability. But it's aimed at video people. All the specs and stuff, it don't make any sense to me because I don't really do video. But the big thing that they're screaming about is it'll do 8K, and there's no limitation on it like there was with the original R5.
Yeah, which you could probably buy a mod kit to strap a fan on the back of it.
Yeah. So does the R3 doesn't suffer from this problem, does it? I've read or seen.
The R3 do 8K? I can't remember if the R3 does 8K, though.
No, the
R5 is the video one, and the R3 is more for the still photographer.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think the R3 does 4K. I don't recall it doing...
I remember the photo shows that I mentioned before. The guy, when he was showing me the R5, asked me what I did, and he said, you don't need an R5, you need an R3. The only thing with the R3, but then again, it's only 20 megapixels. I mean, that's...
The R3 does 6K.
Does it do 6K?
Yeah, so not 8K.
It's not up to 40 megapixels or however many megapixels. The sensor's not as big.
Yeah, but if you're doing, unless you're heavily cropping something or you're doing video, you don't need hundreds of megapixels.
No, I agree. It is just, I suppose, it's...
And actually, if you're doing landscapes, especially if you're doing nightscapes, you're better off with less megapixels, so you have more light per pixel, and you'll get less noise in your image.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It'd be great to do a comparison. We'll have to get Canon to send us some lenses. What I was also reading here, and I know this is going to upset all our Canon listeners and viewers, but they're saying now this new R9 almost knocks the R3 and the Sony A1 into a cocked hat. You've had a bit of experience of this now, haven't you?
Oh, the Z9.
The Z9. Sorry, what did I say? The R9.
Z9.
Yeah. So tell us about your Z9. I know you've been itching to let us know.
He was a bit sneaky because he kept it quiet, and then he put like a behind the scenes picture on Instagram, and I was like,
well, you didn't pick up on the earlier
that camera body doesn't look like a Z7.
Yeah, you didn't pick up on the earlier pieces then, where there were tags in the images.
No, I didn't.
Didn't look at that. So how long you had it then?
I got it delivered. Well, it's funny. I phoned them up. I had a lens on order and macro lenses. I phoned the camera shop up, Graphicart in Switzerland, and said, "Oh, you know, macro lens. You know, any chance of letting me know when it's going to arrive? Because they've not been in stock for a while." And I wasn't so bothered about the camera. I didn't ask them about the camera. And the guy went, just let me check. I've got some news for you. Your Z9's here. But we're not expecting the lens for another 2 weeks. This was 2 weeks ago now. So I've had it 2 weeks. And actually, the macro lens turned up 2 days later. It's really, really nice. So what do I say about it?
You say that again. You don't like the word nice, you told me.
No, I know, I know. I know, I was trying to think of something else, but I couldn't come up with it. It's different. It's a bit different for me because I've not had a professional size camera before. So it's a bit bigger than I'm used to. But I like it because it has... So, it's one I prepared earlier.
Yeah, just have to have... Yeah, okay.
Wow, yeah. Gosh, that's a bit, yeah. It's not for your street photography.
No. So it's got, because you've got the dual grips, and then you've also got a trigger on the side. Now, from shooting yesterday, first thing I should mention, I don't know if you can see it there, but you can't see the CCD. So I've got no lens cap on.
Canon did that first.
It's got a curtain that comes down. Electronic curtain that comes down. It's not the shutter at all. It's just purely there to protect it. I still put the cover on or a lens. I just took that off just to show. Now, the initially, my first problem I had was this trigger button down here. I'd be quite merrily holding the camera and suddenly you'll hear this little and there's 20 frames gone off of the floor or ceiling or the sky or a very close up of someone stood next to you. But it's got a nice little lock on here that you can use, which is useful. It just takes a bit of getting used to be honest. The funny thing is with it, the noise you hear is artificial. So you can actually make it louder or quieter. And you can change the tone as well. So I saw something this last week where someone said, oh, maybe it won't be long before someone hacks the camera and they'll actually add a tone in, or maybe Nikon will do it themselves. It's a bit heavier. Is it just under a kilo? It's about a kilo. So it's a fair chunk of weight, but it balances nicely and it holds really nice in the hand, I have to say. I shot for just under 2 hours yesterday at a basketball match. And I never knew basketball matches were so short but lasted so long, because they stop the clock every time something happens.
Yeah.
It was really easy to hold. It was easy to use. I got to play about with it quite a bit. The tracking was really, really good. I had a bit of a play with it beforehand. Had the wife running up and down the living room.
Well, we better not go down that road.
Please,
let's stick to the basketball.
You could easily pick somebody up at the other end of the court and it would just follow them all the way down. Occasionally, if you've got multiple players crossing, it might drop them, but you could easily get it back quick. There's a number of settings on here where you can adjust that, and I've had a bit of a play. Got it done quite well, I think. Really, really good. Love it. Easy to use. The battery after 2 hours, I think I said I had half a battery left. Down about 50%, having it been on, you know, the whole time.
How easy is it, the controls that I tend to use, the bracketing, is that quite easy to get hold of?
Yes, the bracketing, the bracketing's on the top here.
Oh, is it? Oh, great.
I'm wrong, it's on this side. It's on this side. But you've also got, so you've got three custom buttons down, turn this the right way. You've got three custom buttons down here. So you can customize these. There we go. Three custom buttons down here, which you can set up to do various functions. And then on the back, you've got a little joystick, which you can set. So when you push that, it will do something similar, or the OK button as well. So you can customize a lot of this and move functions around for what you're doing. And you can have different setup menus as well. So you could load a new set of customized functions. I haven't quite played with that yet. I'm still just trying to get the grips with what.
The other one takes me a while to set up is the bulb. Is the bulb setting and the timing quite easy to set up?
It's just that there's just dials on the back here. You can just spin for the shutter. Go straight into, if you just keep going, it goes into bulb.
What mode are you shooting in, Neil?
The basketball manual yesterday was all in manual.
Right.
So everything was shot. I mean, the lighting in there was super, super good, really. So I shot the whole thing in manual, 1250th of a second. It was about 5,000 ISO and f2.8. The only thing I would say that I've noticed is the raw files in Adobe at the moment have a lot of noise in them. Part of it, I think I'm shooting at higher ISOs than I'm used to, so I'm seeing a bit more because of that, but it really is distinctive and there's a lot of chatter about it at the minute. And I'd seen someone on there, because I usually just shoot in raw, but when I do the sports, I'll I'll figure out what settings I need, and then I'll basically just shoot JPEGs, because the files end up so large as RAWs. It's a lot of data to shift, and up, you know, when you're uploading it to the cloud, because I do a lot of my initial sort of photograph selection on the iPad. So I'll just go through them and I'll go yes, no type thing, so I can weed out what I don't want. If the bigger the files are, the harder that is. So there's the other thing with this camera, because of the frame rate, you tend to take more photos as well. So I've been shooting in JPEG, but the thing is, the JPEG created by the camera doesn't have that noise in it. So Nikon obviously know what they're doing with the JPEGs, but Adobe haven't got a proper profile for the Z9 at the moment, I think, and they need to do some work on that. There's a lot of chat that people have been taking the RAW file into different software programs, and you get different stuff out. Nikon have their own software, Nikon NX, and if you import the RAW file into there and you do the same with Adobe, the two files look for work, and if you do a side-by-side comparison, completely different as far as noise is concerned. And the Nikon NX deals with it much, much better. So there's obviously something that Adobe need to do, I would say.
Yeah, it's quite standard, isn't it? Normally, when you get a new camera release, you know, we're talking earlier about, you know, updates to Photoshop and stuff. Quite often, the most common update is, you know, for Camera Raw, and all it will say is to support, you know, new camera models. Yeah. So I think they need to do that for the Z9, I would suggest.
The other thing they were talking about was that there was going to be an immediate firmware.
So one interesting thing I thought, so this camera is 4,385. So that, because the serial range is a different range. So I'm guessing that they've made 4,035 of these at the moment. So there's quite a distribution worldwide. So they must have had a fair stockpile, because these were only started shipping in last week of December.
And you got this on the voucher that you won from the Nikon competition.
I wish.
Okay, so you're going to use it for the lens that we talked about last month, the 400mm lens. Deal?
No, so that 400mm lens, the price came out on that. And if you've got £13,500 or about the same in US dollars, or 16,500 francs, Swiss francs, or you can take a mortgage out on the house.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It would look really nice on your Z9, man.
It would look super, especially with that drop-in 1.4 teleconverter as well, which is just a flick of a switch.
And have you got somewhere that you could rent it, for example? Let's say you were doing a specific sport event where you knew that lens would actually help out. Could you then hire it for the weekend, or...?
I probably could. I don't know what they'd charge. It'd be interesting to find out.
A few hundred quid, I reckon.
Yeah.
For a few days, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
I mean, Nikon, I have to say, the service from Nikon here is very, very good. When my 7200 f2.8 went in for repair, and there was a delay to get it back for getting the parts, they lent me a lens. Which was great. You know, they just gave me exactly the same lens. Here you go. Have it for a week.
I was showing up a few of your photographs there as you were talking, Neil. But this one here, I just want you to quickly talk us through. This one of the swan. How and where was that taken? That's lovely. Look at this.
That was just one lunchtime, going for a walk with the camera. Looking for things. See, one of the problems I've had is I normally photograph rugby, and without that sport, which is not happening at the moment because we have this break in the season because of the winter, I've been looking for stuff to do, which is why I did some basketball this weekend, in fact yesterday, which was really good to do. So I've been looking for birds, but it's not actually a great time of year for a lot of birds either. The one time I managed to find a Kestrel, the bloody thing wouldn't fly. It just sat there looking.
And you got no woods or forests around there then?
Yeah, we have, yeah. There's lots of small birds, but small birds against a very brown bird with a brown background is not particularly interesting. I was really looking for something in flight, or what I wanted to try it on.
Any portrait work? Have you done any people yet?
No portrait work with it yet, no. No, but I'd imagine it'll perform just as well, if not better, than the Z6 and 7.
And do you want to explain this little detail here, the water droplet?
Yeah, so on the bottom left of the Swan, and I didn't notice it until I was editing the photo, right in the bottom left, there's a water droplet, and we spent ages during lockdown all doing this, and there's one in nature.
Yeah,
just sat there, and it's caught pretty well, I think.
Were you using motor drive, or was that just a shot?
I was using the animal autofocus on it,
right?
So it'll pick out, and it's pretty good at picking out the eye most of the time. It does tend, with some, especially the small birds, and that's what I was trying to avoid, the woods and that, with small birds, when there's no contrast at all between the subject and the background, it does struggle a little, for sure. But changing the mode, whether you have a small or a wide area for autofocus, does help a lot with that as well. It worked really good. The Swan was just a great example. When I saw that coming swimming down the little stream, I was straight in there trying to get it. Just the bloody thing kept coming closer and closer, and it was like, no, go the other way. Okay.
And as our intrepid reporter Damien would have said, are you happy with your expensive new camera?
Yeah, it is a bit expensive. It is a luxury. Having done the basketball the weekend, yeah, I'm really, really happy. Looking forward to doing some more. It performed well in really bad light as well on the ski slope.
Yeah, I'll show up a couple of pictures here you sent us through. We'll be interested now to going forward for you to show us some more as you get more and more used to the camera.
It was very nervous skiing down the slope with the camera in the back, though, I have to say.
Yeah. Understandably.
I've got a couple of questions, Neil. Sorry. Just what made you, was it the, when you had the practice run with one, didn't you? Did you pretty much order one straight after that? Would you like,
I kind of waited 2 days. I waited two days.
Yeah.
In fact, if on the, I caused some confusion in the shop because there's actually two orders, one that I never clicked the okay on. So it's just kind of sat in limbo, and they can't get rid of it out of their shop, nor can I. So it's still sat there.
So you might end up with two.
No, I haven't paid for that one. I couldn't either. It was the sport, to be honest, and the fast frame rate. I'm fed up of missing that moment and having the one either side.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you from the weekend, you know, I was shooting 20 frames a second. I was shooting 20 frames a second to start with, and then when this is just too many images, and then I knocked it down to 12, which seemed 12 to 15 seemed to be about right.
My question was on the macro. Does it do automatic stacking?
So the camera has all the same features as the Z9. That, so it'll bracket. It'll.
Does it do stacking?
You can do multiple exposures. You can do focus stacking.
Can do focus.
It has all of that. All of that on there.
That's the one thing the Canon D4 doesn't do. It doesn't do any focus stacking, which is
amazing. So the funny is the picture of the moon here. That's actually done on a timer. So rather than, because I had the camera position set on a tripod, rather than keep touching the camera, I just set it up to do multiple exposures, the same exposure time and everything, and just let it go and take one every 5 seconds.
Built-in intervalometer.
Yeah. Wow. That's the one.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we'll look forward to many more photographs from that, Neil. Okay, let's move on to our topic tonight about planning. So for the last part of the show tonight, we're just going to talk about planning your photographs. In the show before Christmas, Neil very carefully walked us through his shot he'd taken of a Ferris wheel at a Christmas fair, and how the work involved in post to that was involved. But before you get to that point, before you have the photograph, I presume there's quite a bit of planning needs to go into what you're going to do if you have that in mind. So, Neil, again, that sort of planning that shot, what was your considerations? How did you go about that?
So, I mean, I've done pictures of the moon. In fact, I just remembered there's a short blog on my website. Usually if it's something like the moon or a sunset, sunrise, you need to know where the moon's coming up. I use the photographer's Ephemeris. I can never say it either.
Ephemeris, yes.
Ephemeris, that's it. TPE for short, you'll hear it.
Yeah.
I use that. The online web version's free. I actually bought the app for the iPad as well. You can bring up maps and it'll show you where it expects the sun to rise at what time. You can use it in 3D, which is really useful for me because I can see which peaks it's likely the sun's likely to come up from behind. And you can actually track the sun to within a, you know, a minute or two of when it should reach the peak or in the moon. The moon's the one I've used it a lot for because you kind of want to set yourself to be in the position where that moon's going to come up, and it's going to be just behind the peak or sitting on the peak or a tree or some sort of structure that's just in front of it. And you want it to time your image so that you capture it just at the right moment, because the moon, when you're watching it, it moves really, really fast. It's surprising when you first start photographing it how fast it moves. So you do only have one or two, you know, shutter clicks to capture it in effect. And if you miss it that day, you've got to wait. I think usually you can catch it twice, I think, in the same year, but it won't be exactly the same. And to get it a full moon on the same thing is, you know, again, that's one step rarer again. So I'll use that tool to plan what I'm doing. I'll then cross-check that with a local weather app, because it's great to be stood there, but if it's cloudy, you're wasting your time.
Yeah,
absolutely wasting your time. But if I do go somewhere and there's a risk of the weather not being good, I'll try and have something else in mind as well, so that my trip's not wasted. I've been up and photographed the stars doing a star trail before, and I've used it for that, you know, to work out which way's north, where there's a structure that I might want to have in the photograph, and how that'll all work out. But it really does take a bit of planning. It takes a bit of luck as well, and sometimes something I found you do have to be a little careful with is the accuracy of the north on your phone, because that can make quite a bit of difference. You know, it's the difference between being 50 meters in the wrong direction, and those 50 meters you might not be able to travel because, you know, you've got to get over a stream or something. And of course you've got like a minute before that moon or sun or whatever it is has gone past the point that you wanted to capture it. So yeah, that's one of my tools. That map, Google's great as well. Just Googling something or looking at other images people have taken from the same location or similar locations. And if you've never been to somewhere before, Google's brilliant. So you can see what sort of land features that be there, especially if it's on a hiking trail. There's all sorts. There's even there's a wiki for hiking as well. I was told about last weekend that I need to look up. But there's something on my website on dodseyphoto.ch about the moon on the mountain, it's called. And that's just an explanation of how I did a shot. Now, to be honest, I wrote it because somebody said, you didn't take that. That's not real. It's Photoshopped.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to explain how it was done.
Okay. Ian, is that similar for you?
Yeah, very similar. One thing I do have is I keep like a photography sort of wish list in my notes on my phone. So if I come across something at the wrong time of day, if that makes sense, you know, if I'm walking in the middle of the day and I see something that I think might look nice in some evening light or some morning light, I'll make a note. So I have a little bit of a, in terms of planning, I have a bit of a photography sort of wish list. But same as Dodsy, I use the photographer's ephemeris on my phone. You know, it's really useful. You could be, you know, say if I see something during the day which I think might work for a sunrise or sunset, I can, you know, while you're standing there, you can say, right, use this current location, and then I can get, you know, where the sun's setting at different times of the year, because obviously the sun's going to move. So it's a shot that might not work in April, but it might work in the summer months. So you can go through all the different dates and you can see how the sun's moving around. Being in Cornwall, tide times is something that I keep a very close eye on. Yeah, it's no good going to a lovely beach for sunset and it's high tide and there's no beach. So, you know, always plan that kind of thing as well.
When I was down there last year, I was amazed at the depth of tide. It was quite surprising how, you know, we were looking at these huge beaches stretching way out into the distance, and you know, there's quite large rock formations on the sand and all that. And we came back high tide, nothing there. Literally, it was just sea. I was really surprised that
unfortunately,
about 7 meters, isn't it, at some points?
Five to 7 meters. I mean, unfortunately, and sometimes you can always guarantee it every year. You know, there'll be, you know, some tourist that gets cut off somewhere. It's easily done. I mean, there's loads of coves that, you know, you can walk out, you can walk around along the beach and go to another cove around the corner, and then all of a sudden you're cut off with by the incoming tide and you can't get back round. I mean, you've got to be really careful. So tide times is something that I look at religiously if I'm going out.
Okay. So how's it in Birmingham, Damien, then? Tides, sun, snowfall? Yeah, the whole works there you've got to deal with, haven't you?
Well, I wear the watch, so yes, I use the TPE as well. The TPE does have an add-on I haven't bought that tells you about sunsets and predicts sunsets and sunrises, but I can guess them gut by gut. I use the Met Office quite a lot, so look at the Met Office. I use something called Clear Outside, which is a tabular, and it tells me if there's fog in the morning or when there's going to be fog, what the high cloud, the middle cloud, the low cloud's going to be, and I've worked out where roughly what a sunset's going to be or whether a sunrise is going to be. And I've got favourite spots that I know where that I'll go to. My notes are Flickr, so I use Flickr because if I find a spot I like, then I just look it up on Flickr. And hopefully they then put the shutter speed, the focal length and the ISO down there as well. And you get a little bit of notes from the photographer. And that's sometimes how I look at moonshots. I see where they've done the moonshots and look at Flickr and do that. Photopills is a real steep learning curve. I've started going through the videos of that, but it is quite intricate, but they come up with the goods in that. But I quite like a sunset or a sunrise, and so I don't get in too much about what Neil does with the real planning of where the moon's going to be. I saw another one that was a very clever one. They got Blackpool Tower and they'd lined up the moon. I must find it on the Twitter, but this woman had managed to get everything right with Blackpool Tower, and the moon was on top of it. So it was a very clever shot. I also use Sky at Night too. So Sky at Night's very good. I don't know if sometimes I have difficulty trying to locate where I am. And also I've seen some local photographers that I've befriended on InstaMeets, and there's a guy who does some excellent editing. He gets into some light polluted areas and he can clean it all up really nicely, and suddenly you find the Milky Way is there, the core of the Milky Way is there in the middle of all his editing.
Milky Way is on my bucket list to do. not a good one yet.
But the editing, I think there's a lot of editing in it, and that as well. Yeah. And you've got to buy these special star trackers that move with the rotation of the Earth. Expense on top of your Nikon.
Yeah.
And your lenses.
We looked at that that system last year. Do you remember the Equinox system, which came as a bundle and a backpack and all that sort of stuff?
I was chatting to a rail engineer who's a friend of the family up in Scotland, and he's called out to various places to check the railway network in Scotland, and he has a micro weather forecast ready for him as an engineer when he goes to that road bridge or wherever. And he's a young lad, and he's developing into a good photographer. But that got me, and listening to Richard Fox, realize that all these different apps, there's not one app that does it all for you, but there's triangulating with all the different apps.
Yeah,
I do like Clear Outside. It's a really nifty little one. It gives you a lot of information, but it's not visual.
Yeah, you often have to verify one app against another, because you know certain weather apps will say, yeah, it's fine, and another one will say, yeah, it's not quite so fine.
Yeah,
so it's worth checking a few. I've just stuck this Wikiloc is the trail finding app. So if you're looking for walks to do, then you can use that to sort of help plan things. Wikiloc is a list of walking trails and hikes and bike trails inputted by people in general. It's quite an interesting thing to try and use and get ideas of where maybe to go if you're in a certain area.
I mean, the simple thing with the weather is if there's a front coming in, then you know there's going to be something's going to happen. There's a good chance you're going to down in Cornwall, you must know that straight away. And when something's coming in,
well, I mean, down here it can be sunshine on one coast and rain on the other coast. Is that changeable?
We have here down at the lake, it'll be cloudy and 2 degrees. And you go up about 400 or 500 meters and you're in the sun and 14 degrees, and you get the cloud inversions, which are pretty cool.
I think the thing with planning though, I do it all the time. I just go out sometimes, you know, and see what happens. But I think if you've got a limited amount of time to do photography, that's where planning can be useful, because, you know, you can keep going out and you will get lucky. But if there was a particular shot that you want, I think you do have to plan, because especially if your time is limited, if you haven't got the luxury of going out to the same place 7 nights a week, then, you know, you need to put some planning into it.
And the other thing, improvise. Sometimes you go out to do something and you come away with a totally different shot. Mm. Be prepared for, don't be disappointed you haven't got that sunrise. You might have actually got something else that you didn't even think you were going
to get. Yeah, when you're on the way to the place, you may well see another place that you think, oh, that'd be good. As Ian was saying before, you know, he's find something that'll be interesting, you know, check it out maybe on a different day. Maybe that day you want to come early morning instead of late evening.
Sounds interesting. You mentioned a lot of talk there about different software packages and stuff like that. What about the physical side of it? What do you think about when you're planning a trip? Is there a certain kit that you think, well, I need to take that, or is it again just take everything, or do you go minimum, just take the camera and you?
It will depend on the shot, you know. Depending on the shot, you know, it will depend then what focal length, you know, will I require filters? I try not to carry. I used to, years ago, I'd be take the biggest bag I can find, shove every lens in it, you know, take two bodies. I don't bother with all that now. It's just, I'm getting too old for all that. My body can't make it.
So I'm kind of where you were, Ian, but progressing to it. To where you are now. I try and plan for everything. I think the important thing to say as well, I mean, Ian, you mentioned tides earlier, but the weather can change all the time. So, I mean, you really need to be prepared. I'll always throw a snack in there, make sure I've got a rain cover for the bag, even if there's not a very big chance of rain. I have a first aid kit. If I'm going more than just out for like half an hour, I'll have a first aid kit in there if I'm going up into the mountains. I always make sure where Lynn knows where I am or where I'm going. Because, you know, something could happen and I don't come back when I said I would, which has happened a few times. And I usually get a phone call and I'm like, yeah, well, I might just still be taking a few more photos.
My missus immediately rings the pub and says, is he in there? So, you know.
But that's another thing, you know, sometimes if you've got a hike to some of these places, when you get there, you need to make sure you get there in plenty of time, because you rock up and you're there just like 5 minutes before whatever it is you're there to happen. You may find that something's changed. So you need to get there earlier. So it's worth making sure you've got a drink, hot drink if it's a cold weather, maybe if it's a nice sunny day, a bottle of wine. Yeah, but it's important to have other stuff with you, not just your camera gear.
I mean, part of planning might even be having been there before. So I did a sunrise shoot a few years ago of this particular tree that I wanted at sunrise. But it was a couple of miles on the coast path. It was the only way it was accessible. Now, to do it at sunrise meant I had to walk there in the dark. So because I'd done it previously in the daytime, it was fine. I had a head torch and everything, but I knew where I was going. But to try and do that if I'd never been there before would have been impossible. One, to know how long it take to get there, but also trying to do it in the pitch black. You need to have some idea of where you're going.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Okay. So a good few tips there about planning a photograph. You just can't just go off on every time on spec, hoping that you'll get the right thing. And as I say, Neil and Ian, you mentioned there, most of us can't afford to spend hours and hours and hours just on the chance we might get something. Those hours are precious, so making the use of them is the best way you can do it. Yeah. Good. Okay, then, guys. Well, we'll look forward to seeing some more photographs from you. We've been getting a couple in. Any competitions you fancy entering this year, Damien?
I put some in for the Sony award, but that's a wish.
Okay. And both of you are doing your 365, aren't you? Yeah. Ian and Damien, you're doing 365?
With the Sony ones, are they snobbish to like the Fuji images you put in, or...?
No. As Neil said, read the rules. They'll let you put anything in.
From anything, yeah. And as I said, both of you are doing 365 this year, aren't you?
Yeah, well, maybe not for the year, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how you keep yourself going. I'm getting used to what you're saying. It's not causing any ice.
No, seriously, I found it hard. The time that I did it, I found it really hard. So I'm not going to be hard on myself if I don't get through it. You know, I'm giving it a good go though. I am trying, but good. I know there's going to be days where I think, oh, I've run out of ideas.
I'm doing 1 second video a day, but it's quite easy this year because the live function when you take the pictures snips a second of video. So I'm making it up with the video clips
cheating.
From the live function.
You're cheating.
Yeah.
No, I just hit you.
Well, I had every good intention of starting the 365, and I remember getting to the 3rd of January saying, what was I meant to be doing? I knew there was something I should have started. And then, of course, so yeah. Neil, what about you?
I tried to do 52 weeks last year and failed in February, I think it was.
Right.
So when these guys mentioned doing 365, I just went, no.
I'm doing one of those as well, a 52 one, yes.
Okay. Is there a 12 one? Am I going to do that?
Yeah, you could do one a month.
One a month before I get started. Yeah.
You could do one moon a month.
One moon a month, that would be odd. God. One moon in a lifetime would suit me at the moment, Ian.
To be fair,
I thought of a good topic for we could do later. Printing out, I was really impressed. Is it Q Books, the CEWE books I got?
Yeah, yeah.
I really like those books. They're very good.
Okay. They are excellent, yeah.
Let's not start on books, guys. We've got a whole range of them out there everyone's been looking at. Okay, so we'll all look forward to seeing all of you next programme. And we'll take any comments from you again. Please send them in And we'll look forward to taking up any Q&As that you've also got.
So a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web, design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is IMN Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out.
So, Damien, where can people get hold of you?
I'll put on the demo this week, and then you then can click on that, and you can find all my links from the headline on the demo.
Great. Neil, where can we get hold of you?
You can find me. I'm Dodsey Photo on Instagram and dodseyphoto.ch. It's my website.
Okay.
Which I must update again.
Ian, where can we get hold of you?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, lovely. We've also got an Instagram site, haven't we, Neil? How do we do that?
We have. We're btn.photoshow. Tag us in your post for a feature, or hashtag BTNphoto. Photo show, I should say. So we're growing a little community there. Come and check us out.
Great. Okay. My name's Martin Kelly. You can get hold of me at martinkelly@mac.com or as Magic Man in the BTN Slack rooms that we all belong to. And I'll post a link here if you'd like to join. Just send us a quick email saying, can I join? And we'll get you involved. Okay. So till next month, next show, we'll see you all then. Good night, guys. Good night, all.
Cheers, guys.